your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. We'll get you started with the headlines that you need to know. New York Giants cornerback DeAndre Baker pleaded not guilty to 8 charges related to an alleged armed robbery that police say took place last week in Miramar, Florida. Seahawks corner Quentin Dunbar also plans to plead not guilty to his 4 armed robbery charges later this afternoon. His attorney has told ESPN the next step after both players were granted bail Sunday night following a Broward County Sheriff's Office jail satisfying their arrest warrant. So let's see what happens going on from here, but at least we now have pleas, and we'll see what that means moving forward. Another NFL news. Had a little bit of a battle happening on the social media. Devontae Parker, he answered an Instagram poll Monday night that set off Michael Thomas, started a war of words between the wide receivers. NFL on Fox had an Instagram account that asked, which is tougher, A, make a catch while guarded by Stephon Gilmore, or B, break up a pass while guarding Michael Thomas? Parker, who obviously had a great year for Miami, answered A in the comments of the post. That didn't sit well with Michael Thomas, so they got into it on social media. That just shows you how bored we are at this point, that we're willing to compete over polls. And lastly, maybe we get some more real sports happening here, or some version of it. Belmont Stakes are going to be held June 20th, it looks like. So without spectators, it'll be shortened from its traditional length of 1.5 miles to 1 1/8 miles, the New York Racing Association announced Tuesday. So the Belmont's traditionally the 3rd leg of the Triple Crown, and it'll be the first leg for this year for the first time. According to ESPN Stats and Info, the Belmont has been 2nd in some years, but never first. The race has been run at 1.5 miles since 1926. So it gets shortened to 1 1/8 mile, and it will be run without spectators, but it will be held June 20th. We'll see what that means. Those are the headlines that you need to know. It's First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. You can tweet me at Jason Fitz. We're going to let you get in as we go through the conversations today. There was a lot of good stuff on First Take. I don't want to limit you guys to one call. You can call in one on whatever you're hearing that's firing you up. And it starts with a little bit of straight talk about optimism. So this is what you guys can chime in on first. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. States are starting to open up. Are you starting to become more optimistic about the return of sports? We'll get some straight talk. Straight Talk Wireless has the full court cell phone coverage you need. Get the unlimited plan. 25 gigs of high-speed data, then 2G. It's only $45 a month. Saves you up to half the cost of big carriers. I'm trying to save you money here. Everything for less. Savings may vary. See terms and conditions at straighttalk.com. We'll get your take. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. States are opening up. Are you getting more optimistic about the return of sports? This is what Stephen A. and Max had to say about the possibility of sports returning today on First Take.
Look, optimistic means not only hopeful, but confident about the future. I'm hopeful. I'm the hopeful part of optimistic, but I can't say I'm confident. Not about the return. I think sports will return. Specifically, I think the NBA will return. But I don't know that they will be able to complete their seasons. I'm not confident about that. The NBA, maybe, because the NBA seemed to get out ahead of it and take it realistically, you know, centralized locations and quarantining and if the tests become available enough and all that stuff, and can play through the summer months when apparently, where apparently, the virus does not do as well because it's warm weather. But if history is any indication, you know, people point to the Spanish flu as a pandemic that affected the, obviously the world, it's a pandemic, but that includes this country. And people thought it went away in the summer and then it came back with a vengeance. It was much deadlier, in fact, when the weather turned cold in the fall again. So I understand that testing is more widely available, that the NFL has said it does have contingency plans. They will only do this if testing is available. They presume the tests will be more accurate and quicker in terms of the results that they can give, saliva tests, blood tests, and you can get the results very quickly. I understand that's the hope, and people are forecasting that, and that would be great. Based on our federal government's response to this so far, I don't have confidence going forward that they will get it together to the extent that they believe that they will. Based on the history of viruses, the way they mutate, the fact that the Spanish flu came back, the fact that that will coincide with the cold weather for football, I don't know that they will be able to complete their season. So I'm the hopeful part of optimistic. I'm optimistic about the NBA, but as it relates to Major League Baseball and the NFL, I'm still cynical.
Well, I'm confident and optimistic. And the reason is because I'm not depending on the federal government. The fact of the matter is that there's too much at stake. All hands are on deck, not just nationally, but globally. And as a result of that, you have to listen to the medical professionals, the businesses that obviously are doing everything that they can to ingratiate themselves in the proceedings to make sure that we do what we can to proliferate the available test, not to mention the fact that you were on a mission to find a vaccine. The reality is that there's just too much at stake to fail in this regard, and I think everybody knows it. And I have confidence in our and I'm optimistic that this will ultimately get done. I can't pay attention to the rhetoric of politicians or whatever. I'm listening to the medical professionals. And in terms of the sports leagues, the minute they said there are no fans in attendance, then obviously I'm incredibly confident that this will get done. Let's just make sure we understand what that means. Ladies and gentlemen, somebody's going to test positive for the coronavirus. That's just going to happen in all likelihood. That does not mean a sports league has to shut down because somebody tested positive for the coronavirus. The UFC via Dana White showed us that when Ronaldo Souza tested positive for the coronavirus. Obviously, he wasn't allowed to fight that night, but the other 11 fights with the UFC 249 took place. And so you're going to look at that, and people use that as a barometer to some degree to sort of gauge what can and can't be and couldn't be done, and they're going to move forward here. You have 36 plus million people that are unemployed. Let's stop acting like we get to gloss over that because there's the coronavirus pandemic going on. You don't get to do that. There's no way on earth that our society can continue to move forward under these conditions. Everybody knows that. And as a result, it's going to be all hands on deck. They're going to prepare themselves for a worst case scenario that they are going to march on. Baseball is going to have some semblance of a season. The NBA is going to have a playoff. The National Football League has been going on business as usual, and they're going to continue to do that no matter what anybody says. That's the reality of the situation. People need to get over it, understand it, engage in the new normal, and move forward. That's what we are going to do.
I agree, Stephen.
Mike, real quick. I should have said skeptical. I said cynical. I'm not cynical about it. I'm hopeful, but I'm skeptical about their ability to complete the seasons.
That's fair, because there was no certainty in all of this, but I tend to lean towards where Stephen A. is on this, and I'll tell you why. If there's one way to sort of encapsulate the reaction that all of us have to have as we move forward however best we can in our lives right now, it is with the answer to this question. How much risk are we willing to incur in order to seek out whatever goal it is that we wish? And when you look at professional sports, they are, comparatively speaking, in an enviable situation. So many other businesses have been devastated and have almost no opportunity to return. These businesses, while devastated, have the ability to return instantly if they're willing to incur the risk that is necessary. Now, one fighter testing positive for UFC is not the same as a football player, for example, testing positive, or a basketball player, as you see here, because all of a sudden you have contact tracing. If Giannis tests positive, does that mean that his team can't play a given game? This will require a level of flexibility that thus far we have not been willing to have, understandably so. If the medical experts tell the leagues you can have that flexibility, that you do not have to shut everything down because one player tests positive, then I believe because of the incentive, and the incentive is, Max, billions and billions of dollars, that they will come back and they will find a way to complete everything they need to do.
First Take, your take on ESPN Radio. Navy Federal Credit Union has a mission to put members first by making their financial goals a priority. Learn more at NavyFederal.org and join today. What Greeny's saying right there makes a lot of sense when we talk about the dollars and cents of it. And ESPN did a study on this, and the economic impact showed that already there's been about $12 billion in loss from not having sports. That number could double if there's no football. Understanding that there are catastrophic numbers here that we're talking about, we also have to understand that we're viewing everything through the prism of what matters to us. I think that you would talk to many people right now that aren't sports fans, and they would tell you that the least concern they have right now is whether or not sports are coming back. However, when you look across the spectrum, this is something that every single industry across the world is dealing with. If you are a computer maker, if you're a widget maker, if you're a fashion designer, if you're a sports company, right now, you're trying to figure out how to get money coming back into the coffers at some point. So I understand that the money is a massive concern, and we look at the money and what it means to us and what it means to the broadcast partners and what it means to each independent league, and we say, of course sports are going to come back. And that is the logical situation here. But as I've said to many people throughout the course of the last 72 hours, logic doesn't matter in a pandemic. So while logically we all understand that we need the money, that the money needs to start coming in and that we got to have something to root for, I am more optimistic today than ever. But I'm not willing to say that money alone is enough to actually make this happen. The fact that we are seeing municipalities open to the concept of sports without fans is a massive first step. And I feel like the tone has changed in the last couple of weeks, even from some politicians. But we have to understand that ultimately it's not sports fans that'll make this decision. It's not leagues that'll make this decision. It's not commissioners. It's not owners. It's politicians, as municipalities will decide what they're comfortable with. So all you can do is hope that you've elected or you are in an area where you have voice to someone and you can voice what's important to you, if that's sports or if it's not. First, take your take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. We're taking your take on everything along the way as we go. What's your take on it, Alan, in South Dakota? Are you more optimistic right now that sports are going to return?
Yes, definitely, especially with the NBA. And we just saw the Bundesliga in soccer. They had a pretty good outing. I think it was Saturday that they opened up. I think the NBA will be the first. MLB, they're already 6 feet apart for the most part, I think, besides when you're in your own clubhouse. But other than that, I think baseball and the NBA will get back. My biggest fear, though, is college football, because there's over 100 athletes in a locker room typically, plus the staffs. I have a problem with college football. I think that's going to be harder to get done than the NBA and the MLB.
And I don't disagree with anything you just said, especially my caution with college football. And if you're new to me and don't know, I work a lot in the college football space, especially digitally. Last year, I traveled with Game Day, and we did a show I was really proud of with myself and Maria Taylor and David Pollack every Saturday from Game Day. College football is my favorite thing in the world to cover. I make no qualms about it. The college football landscape is much more difficult because we have to realize that through it all, these are kids that don't have a union to protect themselves. So it's not as easy. Now, Major League Baseball players are already coming out and saying, you know, as we talked about last week, money can be an issue. You have NBA players coming out and saying, hey, health and safety is important to everybody. If you're a player right now, how do you feel about coming back? This is one of the variables that we have to at least acknowledge, that not everybody is at the same level of want to come back either. I don't disagree with anything you just said. I will throw one other sport in there. We don't talk a lot about hockey on ESPN. I understand that, but there are multiple reports coming out from The Athletic that the NHL is looking at ways and means that they can return as well. So I think there's a real shot that we're going to get some truncated version of it, of each of these sports. It's just each time we get some opportunity, the window is open. Each time we're going to have to see success. So that means moments like what we have with NASCAR, all eyes need to be on the NASCAR community, not just from Sunday, but for the next couple of weeks as we look to see if having a race had any result to COVID-19. When we start to get those moments where the race can make it through clean with no effect, I think every sport looks across the landscape as a win and then says, what can we take from that? We're going to keep taking your take. Don't forget, tune into the ESPN Daily Podcast. Get you a deep dive into a single story from one of ESPN's hundreds of reporters, presented by Marathon. I can't say it loud enough. Mina Kimes does a great job on that podcast. Be sure to download, subscribe, and review ESPN Daily, available wherever you enjoy your podcast. We'll keep taking your take. Next up, we want your take on a very controversial issue for football fans, as obviously the Rooney Rule is back in the minds of everybody from a perspective of the NBA taking a vote on a proposal that would allow teams to move up in the draft if they hire a minority coach or a minority GM. It also allows several opportunities for coaches that are existing on current staffs to be let go to a better opportunity, and it incentivizes teams basically promoting that to happen. It incentivizes my favorite team's minority coordinators or position coaches moving to work for your favorite team if it's a raise in profile along the way. So there are a lot of interesting nuggets here in the Rooney Rule conversation that's about to take place, but it leads to a conversation of whether or not the Rooney Rule has been a failure. Stephen A. and Max chimed in on that today on First Take.
Yes, it has been. I think the Fritz Pollard Alliance would definitely co-sign that. Obviously, they're committed to helping minorities gain significant positions in the National Football League. They would highlight that it's been a failure. And I think the numbers, the facts show that it's been a failure. But more importantly, the owners themselves have made it a failure because of how the process has been circumvented. They have granted gratuitous interviews to African Americans or have called for that, knowing that they had no intentions whatsoever of hiring a particular African American candidate. They have interviewed African American candidates in the past, knowing that they had already made their selections and it was somebody that wasn't of African American descent. So, you know, you're inviting them into a room knowing that they have no chance whatsoever. It's basically like just treating somebody out to dinner and basically dotting your I's and crossing your T's to say that we went through that process. And it's abysmal to say the least. Offensive coordinators, there need to be more. There's only two in the National Football League, and Byron Leftwich and Eric Bieniemy. We know that Eric Bieniemy definitely deserved a job. I ask a rhetorical question, Max and Molly. Should Eric Bieniemy be coaching Kyler Murray in Arizona, or should it be Cliff Kingsbury, who was at Texas Tech, was just five games over 500, didn't have a winning record his last 3 years, and basically did nothing to earn a head coaching job in the National Football League? We see time and time again where circumstances have taken place where African Americans are shortchanged, they're placated to some degree, and it needs to stop. And as far as I'm concerned, the first order of business is highlighting that the Rooney Rule has indeed been a failure, which is why I said that although I don't support the specifics of what a few NFL owners had proposed to others just the other day before it was voted on yesterday, I'm not a proponent of the specifics in terms of moving up in the draft or anything like that. I think that's a disaster for an African American to get a head coaching job under those conditions. I do love the fact that the conversation, it provoked a conversation, rather, because a conversation needs to be had. Clearly, what you're saying is you don't mind black men in the locker room as laborers performing for you on the field of play. But when it comes to being leaders of men, or dare I say leaders of an organization, it's few and far between, which is why guys like LeBron James and others said they refuse to shut up and dribble, and why NBA players continuously push to have more power and to empower themselves, because to do otherwise would mean putting their trust in ownership. And clearly NFL owners show they can't be trusted when it comes to valuing African Americans in leadership positions. They clearly don't feel that way, and something needs to be done to bring attention to it. So again, the Rooney Rule has been a failure.
I don't think it's fair to call the Rooney Rule a failure, because the Rooney Rule was never designed to be a magic elixir. You know, it's not a panacea for racism. What's the answer to the question, why are so-called minority coaches, people of color, so underrepresented in the head coaching positions in the NFL? And the answer is, the broad answer is systemic racism, right? And look, out of 32 billionaire owners, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that some of them have racial biases. And I'll go further out on a limb and say some of them are unaware of their racial biases, but they exist nonetheless. You could say that about most of us, in fact. It's part of being a human being. And some of them probably are not unaware of their racial biases. And the question is, how do we have the coaching positions, leadership position of authority, high-paying jobs, better reflect the population, as it were, of the NFL itself, the demographic breakdown of the NFL itself, more closely resemble it? Because right now there's an exact negative correlation. It's the opposite of the demographic composition of the NFL. Well, one way is something like a Rooney Rule, and quota systems usually breed resentment. Because when it comes down to individual cases, you're like, oh, I got to check this box. Come on. I got to cross this T, dot this I. I already know who I want to hire. He happens not to be black. I have to bring in an African-American candidate just to satisfy this rule. I understand why that breeds resentment. It also probably has, in conjunction with other devices, would have a good effect. But if you simply have a Rooney Rule and not a better system to put talent in the pipeline, it's not going to do it, obviously. The Rooney Rule by itself is not going to work unless there are other changes made.
First, take your take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. Look, this is an important conversation, and it's an important conversation because hiring is so poor right now in the NFL. And that's one thing you have to acknowledge. Look across the landscape of your favorite team and ask yourself how often they've hired the best guy for coach or for GM. How often have you looked at a hire and said, Now, there's a real question of whether or not candidates are getting qualified, whether or not candidates are getting in front of the right people, how to, in fact, grow the pipeline to the right way. Those are all things that the NFL needs to address, not just because it's great for hiring minorities. They also need to address it because it will give the league better coaches. Ultimately, shouldn't that be part of the goal? I mean, how often do you see teams go in and hire somebody as a first-time head coach and it just doesn't work, and then they come back for a second opportunity? We've seen this time and time again. They have more success. Why? Because they learned so much in the first time. Shouldn't there be a better pipeline to the process of becoming a head coach so that you're more prepared when you get in? Also, shouldn't there be a better pipeline so that throughout the entirety of the process of hiring, you realize that you can get the best possible candidates? I've said it a million times. I grew up in the classical music world. In the classical music world, for anyone that doesn't know, when you walk out on stage for an audition, you walk up behind a screen. Nobody knows anything about you. When you submitted your information to get the audition, you were given a number. You walk out in a randomized pattern from that number. They call your number. You walk out on stage. Nobody sees you. Nobody knows anything about you. You go out and you play. And as you walk off stage, you either got the job or you didn't get the job. It's very simple. It's very fair. May the best player win. I want to live in that altruistic world. Truly. I do. But ultimately, we have to accept the fact that that's not the world that's happening right now. We all want to live in a world where simply being the best candidate and simply being the best coach gets you the job. But we live in a world where, in fact, that isn't the case. Look, you know people just in the regular workforce. How often have you seen somebody move up the ladder and you've said, oh, it's not about what you do, it's about who you know. Well, the NFL is still a good old boys business through all of it. I can't stress it enough. I don't care. For my beloved Raiders, I don't care who you are. If you coach my Raiders to the best possible skill, the ability, that's all I care about. That's all I want. But I don't own an NFL team. Ultimately, you have to look across the landscape of NFL owners and ask yourself this. Are the best possible candidates getting the best possible jobs? Moreover, are talented people getting the best opportunity to become qualified candidates? Those are issues that the NFL should be addressing, not just because it's good for hiring, but because it will make for better football teams. That ultimately should be the goal for all of us. To have the best coaches coach the best players gives us a better product on the field. That is why this is a win for everybody if they can find better solutions. I'll take your take on it. No, not afraid to talk to you guys about the tough issues. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. We'll take your take on the Rooney Rule and whether or not it's been a success or failure, what the NFL could do. We want your take. But coming up, in addition to that, we're going to have a conversation with Dominique Foxworth, who wrote one of the most interesting articles I've ever seen about this last year. I'm going to bring it back to the forefront. We're going to talk about this NFL proposal with an expert that knows more about it than any of us. We'll do all of that next. First, take your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80, and ESPN News. We're presented by Progressive's Home Insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. I'm Jason Fitz. I fired you guys up. Not going to back away from it. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Where are we on the Rooney Rule, the minority hiring issue for the NFL? You guys want to chime in on it? We'll let you. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. You can also tweet me, at Jason Fitz. Before we get to you guys and your take, I want to start with a smart take from the undefeated's Dominique Foxworth, who joins us now. And Dominique, I wanted you on specifically because last year you wrote one of the smartest things I think I've read in a long time when you wrote about the need for a combine for potential coaches. Explain sort of your mindset on the hiring process and why something like that would be a dream world situation for coaches that are trying to make it in the league.
Yeah, I mean, I just was thinking about how they go about hiring coaches, and I think the process is a little bit flawed because you kind of look for someone who traditionally, even though they go outside of these bounds on occasion, it's normally whoever was the best offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator the previous season, or has put together, coordinated good offenses and defenses for a series of seasons. And if you think about it, that's not the job of being a head coach. A head coach is much more about managing a team, about relationships, and about building a culture team, which I think is a lot more interpersonal skills than it is, whereas being coordinating good offense and defense is about in-game decisions and also the ingenuity that it requires to come up with strategies from week to week. And that is something that you can hire an offensive coordinator, a defensive coordinator to do. And what you're asking a coach who was once an offensive coordinator to do is to no longer things that he's good at. You're asking him to find someone else to do those things, and then he needs to figure out these other interpersonal things that are more important, frankly, to the success of the team going forward. And there's really no preparation for it. Some guys are natural at it. Some guys learn because they are prepared for it in some way, but there's really no way to look and figure out if someone has those skills necessarily in the current structure. So that's just what I was thinking. And I analogize it, if I remember correctly, in that piece, I analogize it to saying that the most important position on the team is quarterback. So why don't we put our best football player at quarterback? What if Von Miller happens to be your best football player? It's a real, the things that he is good at are not the things that is required to be good at playing quarterback. So, I mean, the combine idea was interesting because I thought it was an opportunity to try to create some sort of drills, in air quote, or at least some opportunities to put them in situations where you create a scenario and you drop them in it and see how they react to it, a actual head coaching scenario, and see how they react to it. And I think that'll help to get the focus on the right things for hiring head coaches. And it also will, I think, help find better options for head coaches because most of them fail.
We're talking to the undefeated Dominique Foxworth. And look, I think this is all very interesting. And for anyone that doesn't know, Dominique, you obviously had a tremendously successful NFL career. Yesterday, you started out by saying you didn't like the proposal. You wouldn't want to be hired under those circumstances. But then you went to Twitter later in the day to say that you changed your mind. So where are you now? And I hate to ask a double barrel question, but where are you and what changed your mind?
Yeah, so, I mean, honestly, what changed my mind was my original opinion was kind of a reflex, and it was just thinking about being in that situation and not liking it and feeling like it was trivial and you were bribing people to do the right thing. And then I looked on Twitter, honestly, and saw a lot of people that were agreeing with me were people who I never agree with on anything when it comes to issues of race specifically. And it was fine. It's possible that we could agree sometimes, but it just forced me to reevaluate my opinion. And when I reevaluated my opinion, I realized that my opinion was wrong. Like, the fact of the matter is, throughout history, anytime we've had any change in and inside or outside of sports, like, there is going to be some ridicule. And my complaint was, I wouldn't want to be a head coach or general manager hired under this or have that hanging over my head. But the truth of the matter is, anytime you're breaking down barriers, that's going to happen to you. And for Black people in particular, and probably most minorities in this country who have reached any level of success, they are familiar. And maybe I shouldn't even narrow it to just minorities. But I think it's specifically true in that case. When you reach some level of success, you're going to be met with people treating you like you don't deserve it, you didn't earn it. And that's something that's going to happen. So if that's the only reason, and that was the reason that I propose for why you shouldn't do it, if that's the only reason, to me, that's a bad reason, because you know what's worse than having people assume that you don't deserve the job that you have is not getting the job at all. And then you never get the progress that we need. I think it is absolutely going to be uncomfortable for the guys and women, because that was a part of the proposal too, who get hired in this situation. If they get hired in that situation, it's going to be uncomfortable for them. They're going to succeed, and then people will move on and stop talking that type of trash, or they'll fail, and then they'll be sad and move on, and people will always say that they never deserved it. But I don't know what the other alternative is. And again, like, it's sad that the people who have to pay that price are also the people who are being disadvantaged, but no one's been able to so far on Twitter come up with a time where we've made some advancements in any way inside and outside of sports where the disadvantaged group does not have to pay a disproportionate price. And this price to me doesn't seem too high for progress.
We're talking to the undefeated Dominique Foxworth on First Take, Your Take, ESPN Radio. I'm Jason Fitz. So let me be the voice of what so many people say right now, that it's hard to believe that an NFL owner, when he puts so much of his life into this business, would simply not hire a coach because of the color of their skin. Do you believe that is still something that's happening in the NFL?
Yeah, I've stopped trying to understand people's motivation. So, like, I'm not going to say that some owner is blatantly looking at a Black candidate and saying, I can't hire him because he's Black. I'm not saying that the owner wouldn't do that, because I don't know what's inside them at all. But what I'm saying is that they haven't been doing that. And I think it's very easy to come up with justifications for the reason why you hired somebody. And I brought up the day it happened back when Matt Rhule was hired in Carolina. And I feel bad about piling on David Tepper because he said the thing that gave us the opportunity to highlight this. But David Tepper said, and part of the reason why he hired Matt Rhule was because he reminded him of himself and he was comfortable with him and he just had a feeling. Like, those are the things that you say when it's some unconscious bias taking place. And I feel bad about piling on David Tepper because he's no different from the rest of the owners. And frankly, he's no different from any of us. Like, for most of us, our friend group consists of people that are similar to us in some way. Maybe it's not just the way we look. Maybe not just the color of our skin, but like, it's human nature to kind of create, to feel comfortable around those people and understand it. It's something that I do all the time myself without even noticing it. And I think being conscious of it allows us to work past it. So pretending that it isn't, that doesn't happen, and pretending that you don't see color, which is a nonsensical statement, I think is the problem. So again, I don't want to pile on David Tepper because lots of other people have done this and will continue to do it going forward, but you need to be conscious that it's happening and adjust for it. So I'm not trying to say anybody, any team owners are like actively racist and see black people and consciously think they can't be leaders. But I do think that some of the things that happen when you're hiring somebody, when you're choosing somebody, that's what you're doing. When you're choosing somebody, the same thing for friendship relationships or romantic relationships. When you are choosing somebody, there's some stuff that happens that you don't quite understand why it happens. Like, you just feel good in a situation and you don't know why. And oftentimes it's because of some connection that you are not conscious that you have, or some bias. And it's not just people that look like you. I think that I'm rambling, taking over your show. Sorry, but there's a history in this country, I think, and in the world of socializing all to see certain people as leaders and certain types of people as being capable of being in charge and running things. And it just so happens that in this country and most places in the world, that person is a white male. So if you see, and even when minorities are in positions to hire, they are more likely, I'm sure that there are several studies that back me up, you are more likely to see those people as leaders, even if they don't have better leadership qualities. It's just like our vestigial instincts, where you see a cat with stripes on and you're like, that's a tiger, let me get away from it. It's the same thing. You don't have time to think about what's happening in your mind as much as those things just happen. And then you look for ways to justify it afterwards.
We're talking to the undefeated Dominic Foxworth, and dude, you can take over the show anytime. You're so brilliant with this stuff.
Oh, yeah, I was on fire right there.
You're preaching.
That was some hot. Yeah, I'm sorry. I just got to take a second to pat myself on the back. That was flames analysis. Jeez.
All right. So the clock says I'm supposed to let you go, but I don't care. I got to ask you one more. You tweeted, fine, I'll fix the proposal, in a quote tweet to Jim Trotter mentioning the owners are going to be voting on the resolution. So how would you fix this proposal?
I don't know. Give me some time, man. I think one of the things that I've been presenting is like, if you think that there is a, you have to figure out what the problem is. And I said in a tweet storm yesterday that the problem is the owners. You can't replace them, but the problem is their bias. And that's one of the reasons why I rethought my position on incentives, because if they are not going to instinctively do the right thing or naturally do the right thing, you need to incentivize them to do the right thing, or you need to punish them when they do the wrong thing. And I think Bomani Jones brought up to me yesterday that the Rooney Rule was not born out of benevolence. The Rooney Rule was born out of a threat from Johnny Cochran to sue the NFL. So like, that was a punishment, a threat of a punishment. So like, you have to go one way or the other. And one of the things that I've been proposing doesn't actually speak necessarily, but since last year, I've been saying that if the problem is unconscious bias, then you need to make the people who are making the decisions conscious of their bias. And what I proposed was that they should put in writing, because, and this stems from the David Tepper thing, him saying just off the cuff, there was just something about him, he reminded me of me, is one thing. But if you ask them to put in writing why you hired the person that you hired, why you interviewed the people that you interviewed, and why you didn't hire them, like, I think that forces them. It's a forcing mechanism. It stops them from just hiring a guy and then like, oh, I got a feeling, because no one would put that in writing. Like David Tepper, if he had his druthers, he would not. He was just talking off the cuff. He wouldn't sit down and say, I hired him, because he wouldn't put on his own letterhead, oh, he gave me a good feeling. He reminds me of me, so I handed him a football team. I think it will require him to say, and there are plenty of reasons in that situation why he could justify hiring Matt Rhule. That's fine. I don't think that Matt Rhule's a bad hire. I think he's going to be a successful coach down there in Carolina. But, and also the candidates that he brought in who are minority, like, it would be interesting for them to point out what about them made them think that they were not going to be successful. Because if it's unconscious that it's because they don't look like a leader or they aren't comfortable with them, it would force them to put some words to it. They would have to say, oh, man, why didn't I hire that person? So I think that's a initial step that I think would force them to address their unconscious bias. But I think it has to be a multi-prong approach. And I'm going to work on that. I just decided, you guys are fast on these tweets. I just sent that out before I hopped on with you. I just decided I was going to fix it a few seconds ago. Give me a minute. Sheesh.
Well, when you fix it, just call me. Let me know what the solution is. Come on with us. And so let's follow him on Twitter, at Foxworth24. Dominique, man, you're the best. I appreciate your insight, your brilliance on this. Thanks for hanging out with us, my friend.
Anytime, buddy. Thank you.
ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. Commercial insurance and Progressive protects your business and your dream. Choose from over 30 coverage options at ProgressiveCommercial.com. You guys want to react to it? We'll let you react to it. We'll get into this with you guys. We'll get your take next. First, take your take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. First, take your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and ESPN News. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Don't forget the All In Challenge fundraiser continues. They got so many really cool sports experiences you can enter to win. And it all supports organizations providing food to those in need. Time's running out, but you can still enter to win a VIP experience at the MLS All-Star Weekend. Or enter to win an incredible X Games Aspen experience. Get you behind the scenes across access to the competition and also to the music festivals. Cool, you get a little bit of both of worlds. Both these sweepstakes close tonight. Remember, if you go out there and you see enter to win options, if you see auction items that are too expensive, that's okay. Enter to win's just like a raffle. So $10, 10 tickets, you can buy a bunch of tickets, you can contribute. I know times are tough for a lot of people, but if you have just a few extra dollars and you can contribute, 100% of the money raised goes to benefit organizations providing food to those in need right now. If you want to participate or just learn more, visit allinchallenge.com. Get out there, make a difference, and maybe get entered to win a once-in-a-lifetime experience. First, take your take. We're taking your take as a lot of you guys, you fired up the lines. We didn't have any one particular thing you had to call in today. There was no call to action, as they say today. We wanted you to chime in as the show went on, and you are fired up about the Rooney Rule. So we'll take your thoughts on it. Raleigh in Maryland. Raleigh, what do you got? What's your take?
Yeah, my take is, back in history, there was a time where it was all white schools. And then what the Supreme Court decided to do was bust in different minorities in all the schools to make it fair for everyone. Why don't the NFL do the same thing? Why don't they, and next year, everybody got to have a minority in the top five jobs that they have out there. And they just got to do it. Everybody just have to have a minority in one of the top five jobs. Things would change after 5 to 10 years throughout all the teams.
Well, and what you're saying, I think, makes a lot of sense in the sense of what Dominique was talking about, right? You've got to get better guys, and Dominique Foxworth joined us earlier. You got to get better opportunities in the pipeline. That's an important part of it. You've obviously got to get better opportunities for candidates to be found and discovered. And you've got to get candidates that get the opportunity to show who they would be as head coaches. So, you know, that it may come to that. I mean, if that's what it takes for the NFL to get the best possible candidates, there are so many of you on hold. I don't want to cram anybody in before the break. So we'll continue to let you guys get your thoughts in on the Rooney Rule. We'll do all of that coming up. 888-SAY-ESPN. 888-729-3776. Plus, Rodgers and Green Bay might be having an ugly breakup. You'll hear what First Take thought about that next. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News.